You are listening to Screenfish Radio. I'm your host, Steve Norton. In Will Smith's latest sci-fi actioner, Gemini Man, veteran hitman Henry Brogan has come to the point where he wants to hang up his rifle and retire. However, when his government agency turns on him, he must come face to face with his greatest enemy, himself. Sort of. This week on the show, filmmaker Nathaniel Draper stops by to talk about what makes us human and dealing with our ghosts. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish. Welcome to Screenfish Radio. We are thrilled this week to be talking about Gemini Man, the latest Will Smith actioner. And this week we have brought back a Screenfish veteran in Nathaniel Draper. Welcome back, Nate.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's good to be back.
And I'm glad that you could come back on. This is going to be a lot of fun, I think, as we talk about the film. But before we do that, Nate, I was thinking before we get into Gemini Man, maybe this is a chance for us to take a moment and reflect on the great clones that have come before. are there any specific, like, there obviously cloning is not new in films or storylines or sci-fi. So I was wondering, is there any great films or just any cloning film that you think is worth noting?
Excuse the typewriter sound as I Google movies about cloning just to refresh my memory. but off the top of my head, I don't mean to spoil this for anybody who hasn't seen it, but my personal favorite is Moon. Moon is a spectacular movie that is about cloning. And the thing is, like, it comes up early in the movie anyway, so I haven't, like, spoiled the ending of the movie. But it's a film that deals with cloning, and it does it in a very interesting way. I would say that definitely that's towards the top of my list.
Yeah, I've heard good things about that. Did you see Splice? That was an interesting one.
Oh, is that the one with Pauly in that?
Yeah, Adrian Brody.
Yes, I enjoyed that, actually. I thought that was a really twisted...
It's dark.
Movie, yeah. That was a good one, too. There's another one that's actually, it wasn't as big, but I think it's a smart movie, is Never Let Me Go.
Oh, I haven't seen that. I haven't seen that one.
It's quite a sweet movie. It's quite heartbreaking, actually, but it's not so much about cloning, but it's sort of cloning, but the idea is they create people that they then harvest their organs. For other, like, quote unquote actual people, and it's told from the perspective of these clones who basically don't live very long because at some point they're harvested for organs, and it's quite a beautiful film, I think.
Okay, yeah, I have not seen that one. I'll have to check it out. There's Attack of the Clones, but I'm sure that'll come up later. You know what? Oh, Oblivion. That was a bit of an underrated Tom Cruise movie. I forgot about that one.
You know what? I actually haven't seen that yet. I should check that out.
Yeah, it's a spoiler. I think that was a spoiler. But...
It's okay.
It's 6 years old.
Moon, so it's okay.
No, Oblivion actually is fun. It's like Tom Cruise basically does Mission Impossible movies and weird sci-fi. But that one was actually kind of an interesting one. You know, it's funny, like, the evil twin thing has been done forever, even in soap operas and all that stuff, but there's sometimes it's been done really badly. Like, there was, what was Jet Li? Do you remember the Jet Li movie? What was it, The One?
Okay.
Where he's going through different dimensions, and in each dimension he has to kill himself so that, because every time he kills himself in that dimension, he becomes more powerful. And it's just, like, ridiculous. And
oh, wow.
And Jackie,
yeah, this looks amazing.
Oh, and Jackie Chan did
it. I haven't seen it, actually.
Oh, you haven't seen that? Oh, that one's it's weird, man. It's and Jackie Chan even tried it once. Have you ever seen Twin Dragons?
No, I haven't seen Twin Dragons either.
Oh, Twin Dragons is so bad. And you want to talk about, we're going to talk about the technology in this film when we get in the conversation, but I mean, like, the tech for Twin Dragons is so bad. Like, I think, if I remember correctly, there's actually like a shot where one of their fists actually goes into the other character because of how they spliced it. It's like a mistake.
That's amazing.
Oh, man. This one does not go there. This one does not achieve that level. But yeah. Okay.
All right. So I got to check out Twin Dragons and the one. Oh, and Oblivion, I guess.
Well, let's transition then. Let's talk about Gemini Man.
All right. Sounds good.
Gemini Man tells the story of Henry Brogan, an elite 51-year-old assassin who's ready to call it quits after completing his 72nd job. His plans get turned upside down when he becomes the target of a mysterious operative who can seemingly predict his every move. To his horror, Brogan soon learns that the man who's trying to kill him is a younger, faster, cloned version of himself. As always, this podcast is rated S for spoilers. But, Nate, what did you think of Gemini Man?
I actually thought it was decent.
What? No.
I like the ideas. I thought there was a lot of cool ideas that were present in the story. The high frame rate, I actually don't have an issue with it. I thought it looked good. And one of the things that actually stuck out to me in watching the movie was there were some really interesting, very, I don't know if they're subtle choices, but there were some very interesting directorial choices in terms of using this mirror motif in the visual storytelling, which I thought was just a great visual to complement the story. And it's one of those little small things that, you know, a really experienced director like Ang Lee knows how to do to really elevate the material. I know it's been bashed a lot by critics, but I thought it was decent. Like, yeah, I thought it was okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun. I saw it twice, mainly because the first time I came out of it, I couldn't remember anything from it. So maybe it's appropriate I saw this movie with the mirror image twice. And actually, the second time, I came out of it and I enjoyed it more than I did the first time. I don't know what it was about it that I connected with more in the second time, but I don't think it's great. I think that it's getting roasted more than it deserves. See, what did you think about the CGI on Junior? Did that work for you?
Yeah, it worked for me.
Because I thought there were scenes where it looked like there was lag. Like, just not all the time. The close-ups, I thought, looked really, really good. Maybe it was during, like, the scenes where there was a lot of movement. And maybe that's the whole frame rate issue. I don't know. But there were a couple of times where I kind of thought it had Superman mustache syndrome. You know, when he's walking from the college, it kind of lost it. But again, like, I'm not seeing it in high frame rate. But I thought the technology and the close ups and that when he's speaking to himself, I thought it looked really good. But it's funny because everyone's using this tech now, so I think it's really kind of funny that they're talking about how this is pushing the boundaries and all that stuff. I guess it is with the high frame rate. But everybody's using de-aging. Like, Scorsese's using de-aging in The Irishman.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because they got, what's his name? I'm sorry, I can't believe I just said that. De Niro. Yep. I say, what's his name? What was the guy? You know the guy. De Niro, they de-aged him 30 years throughout most of the film and whatnot, and people are taking shots at this one. But what do you think about the use of the technology within the film? Do you think they execute it well?
At first I was taken aback by it, but I got used to it, and I don't have an issue with it. I remember when The Hobbit came out, people were complaining about the different frame rate. I've always felt it's a little gimmicky, to be honest. But I don't mind it. I think in this case it's justifiable, and here's why. So I read an interview after I left the theater. I was just reading interviews with Ang Lee, and he said that the reason for doing it was because with 3D, he always felt like in 24 frames, especially doing action, there's the motion blur in 3D becomes hard to translate, and it actually is, it doesn't quite work in 3D. And he was actually talking about Life of Pi. He felt like in Life of Pi, some of the 3D didn't quite work. And so when they were doing tests, he felt like the higher frame rate, just it looked better in 3D. And one of the things I have, I felt like, at least in the theater where I watched it, even in the low lighting, there's the scene where they're in like a crypt and there's skulls everywhere. It's a really cool set piece, actually. I thought it was a great setting for an action scene. And it's all lit with, she's just holding a flashlight. The character played by Mary Elizabeth Winstead is just holding a flashlight, and it's dark, but I felt like I could still follow it, and it's still like the 3D didn't look bad to me. And I mean, because at first, you know how like there's some TVs have like a refresh rate on them, so it's really smooth.
Yeah.
That thing, that's one of my pet peeves. If I go over to somebody's house and they have their TV set to that, I have to, like, it takes every ounce of my strength to prevent myself from just grabbing the remote and changing their TV settings to, like, just regular, what would look like a regular 24 frames a second picture. So it looked like, when the picture first came up, that's what I felt like I was watching, but my eyes adjusted to it. And Ang Lee actually talked about it in an interview. He talks about how we're just not accustomed to seeing it. And the more it's used, the more our eyes will become accustomed to seeing it. And I think it's a perfectly justifiable choice in terms of using the 3D. And he's trying to, I mean, he's experimenting with 3D technology still, which is, and I have to applaud him for that, because that's, it felt like it was kind of a gimmick that was introduced like 7-8 years ago to try and get people back into the theater. But there are still filmmakers like Ang Lee who go, well, there's a way we can maybe use it to tell stories in a different way, which I think is very admirable.
I think you're right. I think ultimately the problem is that nobody else can show it in that thing, in that speed. So I think I heard that, or when we were setting up this podcast, didn't we, like, there's only one theater in North America, I think, that can actually show it as it's originally supposed to be intended, with a proper high frame rate and 3D and all this stuff. I think it's crazy. So he made a film that can't be shown properly.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah, because I think what I watched was 60 frames a second as opposed to 120 frames a second.
Yeah, yeah.
Something like that, yeah. Yeah, exactly, and that's a good point too. Like, and it's not like TVs with the way TVs are going. They're more, a lot of the technology is going into HDR as opposed to 3D or high frame rate playback.
Oh, they wanted to go 3D. Remember, they wanted to go 3D on
their
TVs.
That's right. They did at one point, yes. And then that kind of, it's not so much a thing you see anymore. It's more, at least TVs are advertised. The big thing is like 4K HDR.
Yeah.
To me, it seems like the big sticker they slap on the box to get you to buy it.
Well, they bottomed out. They used to make 3D Blu-ray players, and they stopped making them because no one was buying them. Part of that is because the TVs just didn't look good, and part of it was because how do you maximize it? If depending on how you're sitting in the room and the angle and all this stuff, it just wasn't working. Mm-hmm. And so they actually just said, you know, hey, maybe people just want a really clear TV, and then all of a sudden people start buying TVs again. Which makes sense. I mean, come on.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, HDR is actually something I'm actually happy they finally are bringing it out. Basically, just you get to see more detail in the shadows and more detail in the highlights, which is always something, at least looking at picture, like a film image on a TV, is something that's always frustrated me. If you're looking at a TV that's not calibrated properly and you're like, there's so much more detail in this image that you're losing. Like, oh, okay, so the people who made that one really dark episode of Game of Thrones, if everybody had HDR TVs, people wouldn't be complaining that it's too dark.
Yeah. Because there were way too many other things that people could complain about that season of Game of Thrones. But anyway, that's another day. It's a gimmicky film, but, I mean, it's fun. I guess it's kind of fun. Like, you know what I thought it was missing? Is I thought that the greatest weapon that Will Smith has, they took out in most of the film, and that was his charm.
Oh, okay, interesting.
Like, I don't know how you... It's funny, because people knock Will Smith for the genie tech from Aladdin, although I think by the end it actually looked pretty good once they finished it. But it was his charm that carries him through the film, and I'm not saying that he has to be charming in every role. Like, he can act. But the older self is, like, really somber and depressed. And the younger self is sort of lacking the energy that he used to have. So I thought that was the weapon it was missing. I don't know.
Yeah, well, that is interesting that you mentioned the older Will Smith being more somber, melancholic. I personally, if I was to have cast a role like that, I don't think I would have picked Will Smith. Because he doesn't strike me as a melancholic dude, and maybe that's because I follow him on Instagram and he's I don't know, he's kind of goofy on that. And I mean, everybody has sort of a different, you know, personalities that they show in different showcases. But I don't know if I don't know if he was like the hardened assassin type. But then again, it's like I don't know many Hollywood actors that really pull that off, and I right. entirely believe it, because you're asking these people who, you know, have had the world handed to them to play someone who's broken and, you know, has basically had to hide their entire lives and has, you know, is also suffering from PTSD in this case. So, but I mean, yeah, that'd be my 2 cents on that.
Yeah, you know, it's funny to me because the film in a lot of ways did have a Will Smith film vibe to it when I think of, like, his earlier stuff. Like, I don't think it allowed him to have the energy or the charisma that he did in so many of his roles. But, you know, like, I could see this have coming out shortly after Enemy of the State. Like, an Enemy of the State Will Smith type film in some ways. This film kind of mirrored that for me.
And
there is, sort of, like, Will Smith films, you know, I'm not criticizing Will Smith because I really love Will Smith and I get a lot of enjoyment out of watching him in just about anything.
Mm-hmm. And me too, yeah.
But that's what I mean is, like, the films he does often aren't particularly, like, layered. Like, this film is not subtle, which surprised me because it's Ang Lee.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point.
But again, and maybe that's what the knock is against it. I don't know. Like, but I came out of it and I'm like, you know, that was a fun ride. You know, there you go. There's your Scorsese quote. Gemini Man is a theme park ride. That's what somewhere Will Smith and Ang Lee are partnering with Universal to turn this into.
Yeah, there you go.
And I'd ride it. Yeah. But like Andrew Niccol helped write the screenplay for this thing. I'm like, oh man, that's Truman Show Andrew Niccol. That's Gattaca Andrew Niccol. It's also, you know, In Time Andrew Niccol with Justin Timberlake. And it's like, oh yeah, okay.
I'm just looking it up right now. Sorry. Credited as on the screenplay, you mean?
Yeah, Andrew Niccol was credited. Now, he's not the only one. David Benioff is on there as well, who has been involved in, you know, Game of Thrones and Troy and stuff like that. And I was not familiar with the other guys. Jonathan Hensley he was involved in Jumanji and Die Hard with a Vengeance, also the 220. But, you know, like, Niccol knows sci-fi, Benioff knows personal drama, and you know what I would have liked to have seen is more scenes with him and Junior. I think that's what I would have liked too. If you're going to play it really serious, more interaction with your younger self might have been a little bit more. But some of the action scenes were really good. I liked the scene where he first gets hunted, they're on the bike chase, you know, through the streets. I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, I thought that was, as far as like action scenes go. I personally am generally bored by action scenes.
Right.
Because the thing is, that most of them you watch and you're like, oh, it's, you know, it's fake. So it's kind of the thrill is taken out of it for me, unless they do something really interesting with it. And that was one scene where I enjoyed watching it because I thought they did some creative things in terms of how they used the motorbike, and then again, going back to the thing with the mirrors, shooting some of that action scene in mirrors, there was just some interesting staging, and it was a good technical showcase in terms of how to do an action sequence in a creative way.
Did you see the Instagram post that sort of went viral? It was pretty funny.
I don't know if I did. Is this like a meme that went viral?
They showed, you know, where Will Smith jumps over the bike? He pushes himself up and the bike goes under him. So in an unexpected twist, the studio released the footage of him wired up and on green screen. And then they just kept like looping in other things. Like, it was really funny. And it's like, really? I think it was Paramount. I'm not sure if it's Paramount or not, but whoever it was, they were having fun at their own expense. I thought that was actually pretty funny.
Oh, I gotta find this. This sounds amazing.
Yeah, I saw it online. I laughed. I thought it was pretty funny. And it was nice to see Benedict Wong. I like Benedict Wong as coming in as Baron.
Yeah.
So I mean, there was a lot to like in it. It was enjoyable. It was not a film that I had high expectations for, but I had more fun than I expected.
One of the things I did that same day, I knew I was going to see Joker as well. And I intentionally made the choice of watching this before Joker because I didn't want to watch Joker, which I heard is fantastic, and then
watch this.
And then have this not be even worse than I was expecting. But that all being said, I enjoyed it. I would agree on your diagnosis, so to speak. It's a fun ride. It's a fun movie to watch. I enjoyed it. Yeah.
I like the conversations he has a lot about his ghost. The ghost is sort of a recurring theme within the film.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, like, what do you think it means to deal with our ghost? Because that's sort of thrown into the mix here with Will Smith trying to escape his own younger self.
Yeah, well, it's very much taking that. It's making a metaphor very literal, I suppose.
Right.
Because in the case of this story, it's at the heart of it is really about a guy who's coming to terms with his past and his attempts to escape it. What's stopping him from escaping that is actually himself. So, and as like a concept, that's a very interesting and rich concept. And I think in the case of this, the ghost is basically actions, a previous life that he's had that he has regrets about. And you see this in the way he talks to Junior. He talks about, I made these mistakes, and you don't have to make these mistakes.
Mm.
So there's, I mean, in a way, there's an element of time travel too. And if you had the ability to go back and talk to your younger self, in this case, it's a very, it's a situation that the character has where he's able to literally talk to a younger version of himself.
Will Smith keeps talking about the mirror he doesn't want to look into. And at one point, they actually compare Junior to that. You know, you don't want to look back at that kid and see. It's interesting because I'm not. My question would be, what is it that he doesn't want to see? Like, yeah, is he reminded of the fact of what he was when he started? Is it just that he sees who he's become? Like, I think that's one of the things I thought was interesting about it is that I was a little unclear what exactly. I mean, I knew he had regrets, but the younger self you would think would be a point of like making new choices of starting over.
Right.
But he seems like I think Mary Elizabeth Winstead actually says that he's the mirror you don't want to look into. And he has a hard time reconciling that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think, as you were saying that, I mean, another movie that I feel like Gemini Man borrowed from, and, well, I mean, most contemporary action movies, I think, borrow from it, is the Bourne trilogy. Because I feel like the Bourne series has thematically a similar element, and the Bourne movies, obviously, it's a guy, he's forgotten his past, and he's trying to figure out what happened. And one thing that you pointed out was Gemini Man, there's almost a specificity that's lacking. Because in Bourne, he actually discovers specific things that he did, specific actions that he had did that had consequences. And in this case, it is almost, yeah, it's very general in the sense that, oh, he's the mirror you don't want to look into. But yeah, it's not really specified, like, so what is it, like, what did you do? I mean, it's implied that he's killed a lot of people, but there's something about it that's not, it's lacking a certain degree of specificity, I think.
Right.
Which I think maybe makes it harder as an audience to latch on to, because you have to infer a lot of things, maybe.
Well, and, you know, just looking at my notes here, at one point when he's talking to Junior says, you're just trying to rattle me, and he says, I'm trying to save you. But from what? I guess from Clive Owen. You know what? There's a scene that sort of comes together, I think, was the scene where they're facing off against Clive Owen at the end. I actually like that scene. And he's going to, you know, you pull that trigger and you'll break something inside of yourself that you'll never get fixed again. You don't want those ghosts. But then he's willing to pull the trigger.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's almost like he says, well, he's saying in that moment that I'm already here and there's nothing I can do about it, but I'm going to prevent my younger self from having to go through that.
Right.
And actually, I think Clive Owen actually says at one point that he was supposed to be perfect because he doesn't have Henry's pain. Is that, if I'm correct?
I recall that. Yeah, I mean, because that was another thing that was sort of hinted at in the story is the question of how, you know, this idea of what's the perfect version, and you've removed feeling, and how much feeling does it actually have? Because in this case, Junior obviously is a much more sensitive character than is led to believe earlier on, and certainly much more thoughtful, I think, as well. But yeah, in terms of the dynamics between them, between him and Clive Owen, and the question of, like, what human it comes into play, which is another big theme from science fiction.
When Owen talks about, I don't even know what his character's name is, Clive Owen. What is his character?
Clay Varys.
Clay Varys, right. I keep wanting to call him Colin Farrell, but I don't think with Varys, you know, the reason that he's got beef with Henry is that Henry's grown a conscience. And I think he actually says that when they're young and stupid, they believe anything you tell them. When they get older, they grow a conscience. And that's what you want. That's what he wants. He wants them young and stupid so that they can just be machines. And certainly that's how he treats, well, it's not how he treats Junior, but it's how he treats Junior, Will Smith number three,
you know, yeah.
Which eventually I'm sure he's just going to clone him and do his own Fresh Prince reboot, but eventually they're just like doing his laundry and around the house. Anyway.
Yeah. Oh, that would be, yeah, sort of like Orphan Black.
Yeah, that's right.
But with Will Smith.
See, there was a show that had some subtlety. Anyway, that's another story.
Wait, you mean Fresh Prince or
In the cold old laboratory, born and raised. Well, what do you think about that idea? Oh, because you and I were talking before, and you mentioned about how Varys sort of, he wants to create this army of clones to fight his battles. You know, Star Wars kind of did it first, but he wants to do the same. What do you think about his arguments there, or that whole ethical quandary?
Well, I thought that was what made him, you talk about that scene being a stronger scene, and I agree. I actually felt like that, it made him a much more interesting antagonist, so to speak. He wasn't the bad guy with the mustache, like, aha, yes, no, my plan. No, he actually, like, he was able to justify it in a certain way, and in an argument that's oddly compelling and disturbingly compelling, too, because he's basically saying, we're going to create people that we know we're going to just throw into battle, but it's going to be in order to spare other people who would be sent otherwise, who have families. So it was a very interesting way, and I think in terms of that character, it worked for justifying that character's actions. And actually, I think, to be honest, I actually felt he was the most interesting character in the movie as a result of that, because he kind of had, even though it was twisted in a way, he had a guiding philosophy of some kind.
I wish they fleshed it out a little better. Like, you know, he didn't have a mustache, but when it opens, he's kind of a mustache twirler, right there. You need Gemini. But no, we don't need Gemini. Yes, you do. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
That was something about the film I thought was pretty funny, is how quickly they pull the reveal. You know, like, it was like, he gets attacked, and then they're like, he survived. What? And then he's standing there, is like, I knew we should have killed him earlier. And it's like, so so we're gonna jump right into this. Okay, so you're bad. Actually, I think at one point they actually say it feels good to kill some bad guys. I think they say that at the beginning of the film or something to that effect. Because I think when he's shooting the guy on the train, you know, he's talking to his guy who's there, right? The guy who videotapes it on his phone. And he's like, oh, are you good? He goes, yeah, I'm good. It's good to take down some bad guys. And I thought, oh, okay, so we know. But yeah, no, I think the argument is interesting, because the funny thing is nobody would debate it per se if he was talking about drones.
Right.
You know, if you're talking about drone strikes, people are like, well, yeah, okay. If you're going to war, that does make sense, that more than sending in human life from a humanity standpoint, drones makes more sense, you know? It's interesting, though, because he views these characters as drones in so many ways, which is why I thought Junior, I wanted more with Junior, because they really go to some lengths. Just to me, it just wasn't quite far enough to prove he's not a drone.
Right.
You know? Now he does go through sort of a transformation as the film goes on, which I thought was really interesting. But like, did he really have to shoot him with bee venom? Like, it's like, oh, he almost died. It had to happen. Okay. right, fine. Couldn't have just asked him for a hair sample anyway.
To your point of, there was, it could have been fleshed out more. And I think part of what I took out of the movie was that, like, there were the seeds of some really interesting ideas.
Yeah.
Somehow in terms of how it all came together, it was just, yeah, and even this sudden turn at the end for Clive Owen, and yeah, he just shows up, he's like, ah, you thought I was dead, but guess what? Joke's on you. There was more of an opportunity. I mean, you could say that about so many films.
Sure.
You could have done this. I feel this as a filmmaker. I always feel that way with my own films. Like, oh, but we could have done this, and we could have done this. And yeah, you're limited by the fact that you've only got an hour and, you know, maybe two to tell a story. But, in terms of it, the one thing that confused me a little bit was with Clive Owen, he wants to have one of these clones like as his own son, and then there's others that he's obviously said, okay, well, these are the ones I don't care about. So there was an opportunity to say, oh, okay, he's actually someone who maybe wanted to have a family at some point. And just has a very twisted idea of what that family would be. He has a son who he can basically boss around, and he does whatever he wants.
Yeah, see, they focused a lot on him as a father, but somehow they also don't really explain why he picked one. You know, he just sort of says, I am your father, you know, and that's who I am. But again, like, you're right, you could nitpick on it, and I do think the film was fun. But like, Clive Owen's character, I think you're right. I think Varys is one of the more interesting characters, because you're right. He seems to actually have a guiding principle. We just don't find it until the end of the film. And his relationship with Junior is a good setup. It's a good setup. Like, here he's creating these mindless drones, and he kept one for himself. Okay, again, that's Attack of the Clones. That's exactly what happens. Yeah. I think that was Jango Fett's fee. I think they say, he wanted an unaltered clone for himself. Anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. I was actually about to, it's the Boba Fett clone.
That's it. He's the Mandalorian. Anyway, I'm so excited about that.
What a twist.
But you know what, though? I mean, here we have this conversation about these character. Or sorry, here we have this conversation about these clones and how he's using them. But Junior, he sees us clearly different. So the question I would have for you is, what do you think it is that makes us human? Because there is something different about Junior that you don't get after Robo Will comes in at the end and the two of them have to team up to take him down. Mm-hmm. So what is it about Junior that sets him apart?
Well, I mean, there's obviously the relationship between him and the Clive Owen character that they play up to infer, and I think part of the way it's constructed is to lead you to infer that the Clive Owen or Clay Barris gave Junior tried to give him some semblance of I want to say normal life. Mm. Like growing up, like he hadn't been adolescence. There's a photo actually that appears at one point of him and them like hunting together. And actually, he makes reference to it later. Junior saying, "I hated going hunting. You always took me in, and I always hated it." So there's, I suppose that's kind of what the where they were trying to get was that because he had he grew up in a home and went and did things that. People who living their lives growing up would possibly go and do.
Certainly, they're like certainly had the home, and it's funny because I was sitting there watching it, and I'm like doing going back to high school sociology with the nature versus nurture sort of thing.
Oh yeah.
Remember that, and wrestling with this idea of what makes him human. And one of the things, and I just saw this in my notes now, I actually forgot about it. It said that you have a conscience and this makes you human, but less profitable as a soldier. And I think, the idea of choice and ethics is what sort of defines their humanity, because by the end, Henry, like, I think Henry says that what he's doing is the least, his views on the clones are totally different. He said this is the least humane thing that you could do. Like, that's inhumane. And Varys says that's the most humane thing Gemini has ever done. It comes down to a fundamental view of how they look at these clones. Like, are they human life or are they these empty caskets? But by the end, Junior has sort of developed this conscience and this idea of making choices and right and wrong. And I think that's when that sort of sets them apart, because Robo Will is just a mindless drone. They don't give him that chance.
Right.
Or they don't, because he just comes in and they kill him, and then they take off his mask and they're like, dun dun dun, and there it is. I think it comes down to this fundamental idea, because you're right. Like, I think that, Varys has an actually kind of legitimate idea of saving families with their children the trauma of losing someone in battle. Mm-hmm. However, in doing so, is he creating human life in order to save other people for the value of human life? Like, it's backwards.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the thing that's the irony. Well, we're creating these things to save lives, but they're going into war with other people. So, what lives are we really saving?
But I mean, Varys isn't concerned about the other side, right? He's just concerned about the American military at this point. And, so again, the value of human life is obviously the key question, but it's interesting to see the diametrically opposed views. Like, Henry seems to just sort of think or see them as human because they bear this image. He's like me, he is human. And Varys just sees them as these empty boxes, It is funny to me that Will Smith, you know, starts describing his life. That was something that lost me. There were a couple of scenes where Will Smith starts describing his life and it gets beyond his allergies. At one point he says, you're allergic to bees, you like this, these are your tendencies. And at one point I think he even says, like, you're a virgin, aren't you? And I thought, now, okay, how do you know that? I'm like, okay, that's not really fair. I mean, he sort of explains it about the fears of relationships, but so much of that is determined by Henry's past. I don't know.
See? Yeah, it's like, yeah, exactly. It's like, well, that's like, what do you mean I am? Like, you mean you are or you were? Don't pin this on me, man. Come on.
That's like saying you've never been to a movie theater. Like, yes. How do you know that? He had a dad, man. Like, it wasn't a good dad.
Exactly. You skipped all of your grade 11 chemistry classes, didn't you?
Because I know your tendencies. I'm like, okay, well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I mean, some of those were oddly specific. And were beyond, like, you always sneeze four times. Like, okay, that's a, you know, I guess, suppose that's a thing that, you know, people have a certain pattern when they sneeze. But yeah, like the, oh, you're a virgin, right? Yeah, I mean, well, even though you're the same person, you know, people, you may have had a different set of experiences. Yeah, it's just sort of a strange thing to assume, I suppose.
Yeah.
It's not a biological, like, response to something. It's a, your life followed the exact same pattern my life followed.
Well, and I think the interesting thing about that is that Varys did what he could to they gave him the same training, but he tried to change his life. Like, he says that. It was deliberate.
Right.
Junior actually says, you made a decision to have a scientist make a person out of another person. Like, it's all about making decisions to try and create this certain thing. And Henry did not have those decisions. I understand the idea of him trying to help, repair his mistakes. I get that. And I actually appreciated that idea, this idea, like you said before, a very literal him dealing with his past and trying to course correct, you know, along the way. But you can't assume that everything in his life is exactly the same as yours, because he's not you, even though he's you. But maybe the point is he didn't have a choice. I don't know.
That is another interesting thing that's sort of hinted at with the movie, is that whole question of nature versus nurture. And, you know, even though he is in many respects the same person, is he really the same person because of the social conditioning or the experiences that he had? Does that make him, does that make him a different person?
Well, and he says at the end of the film that he wants to make his own mistakes.
Right. Yeah, there you go.
So he's trying to make his own decisions, and that comes back to it. A lot of the things when they talk about what makes him human, it comes down to a conscience, it comes down to choice, like these, the power to make decisions, free will. Again, there's so much stuff they could have really mined well. And that's where I think, like, the film's very ambitious. Maybe that's the way to describe it. Maybe that's the flaw in the film, is so ambitious.
I would say that's a fair point to make. Like, it's definitely, and I think, and that would, that's part of why I enjoyed it, was there was all of these things that were peppered throughout the movie that gave you enough to go, okay, there is some depth here. But yeah, and it's possible that, I mean, I know just from my experience of writing, one thing that one of the pitfalls you can fall into is you become too ambitious and you go, oh, I want to pack this into it and this into it, and it just becomes too scattered. And some of the best films really have, like, a very strong singular idea that everything sort of revolves around. Because you can, like, just the conversation around, you know, what is human choice versus, you know, how much autonomy do we have? That's a whole thing in and of itself versus the ethics of, is it right to clone someone for military purposes? That's a whole other, I mean, in terms of cloning, have you seen the movie Moon? That would be a good, I think, counterpoint to Gemini Man, where you're taking, you know, the concept of cloning. Moon is an example where it was done exceptionally well. And it's him acting against himself.
Right.
Now, the same age in Moon, but in Gemini Man, it's obviously, you know, there's an age difference. But Moon would be a case where it was done in a way that was really exceptional.
Yeah, I'll have to check that one out. I've heard nothing but good things about Moon. I've just never taken the time. I think it's on Netflix. So I'll have to take a look. This has been fun, Nate, but we should screen it or skip it. Gemini Man, screen it or skip it?
Screen it.
At which frame rate?
ideally, the highest frame rate you have available.
I don't feel like you have to screen it. I feel like you could stream it. And I feel guilty saying that, given we just talked about the technology like a few minutes ago. But, I mean, in terms of, like, it's, I found it a fun movie. I am not hating on the film. Believe me, I actually kind of liked it. I don't understand all the hatred. I think that a lot of that falls into everything's either got to be Oscar-worthy or it's gutter trash.
Right.
And so this one is falling into that category, but it isn't to me. Like, I think that you could see it in the theater, and I think it's a fun ride. This truly is a theme park ride. I will reiterate that. But that's what it wants to be, so I think that's fine. But I think I would probably say, like, if I caught it on, you know, as a Netflix film, I would enjoy it just as much in my home. Like, I think if you can catch it in a high frame rate 3D, sure. But it's not a run out and see it immediately for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think maybe I wonder if some of the disappointment was because it's Ang Lee, so people were expecting, you know, a follow-up to Life of Pi, so to speak. And it doesn't have the same depth of story or the same lush, impressive visuals that Life of Pi had. But I would say it's a well-produced, well-directed, well-acted film. I think it's worth the time. It's a fun movie. Plus, maybe I just have more time to watch movies, so even if it's like, it's okay. I'm not going to, you know, it's no big deal for me.
Well, you know what? Someone out there says, ooh, a new Will Smith movie, I want to go see it. That is exactly who the film is made for, and it's fun. So
there you go.
I think it's fine. Like, I don't think it's, I think it's enjoyable. Like I said, I enjoyed it more the second time I saw it than I did the first time. I still see glare, like, the problems with it, but I enjoyed it. Thanks, Nate. Thanks for coming on. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I know. This is always fun.
And for you at home, a reminder, you can find us wherever podcasts are available. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, SoundCloud, and Podomatic. If you can find us on your Alexa device via Stitcher. And, of course, if you go to the podcast page at screenfish.net, you can download Fishing for More, which has small group questions that you can have with people that you see the film with to get things started anyway. We will be back in our next episode on Maleficent, Mistress of Evil, which will be a fun conversation, I'm sure. So, again, thanks so much, Nate. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve. That was fun.
Yeah, anytime. And for you at home, we started the conversation. This was Screamfish. Just googled Gemini Man and I'm looking it up on screen here, and you know how it says people also ask.
Mm-hmm.
So okay, I gotta read this before we go on because I can't even get this into a conversation. Who plays the clone in Gemini Man? What is Gemini Man based on? Is Will Smith's son in Gemini Man? How do you know if a Gemini Man is in love with you?
I like that one.
It's like, wait a minute, what? I clearly googled Gemini Man screenplay, and that's what it's asking.
It's actually a movie about horoscopes. I never realized it before. Wow.
That's it.
So deep, yeah.
Now I understand.
Yeah, it all makes sense now. Yeah, I think Mary Elizabeth Winstead's supposed to be like a Cancer, maybe. Clive Owen's got to be Scorpio.
Oh, yeah. Oh, big time. Yeah. Big time. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
It's funny that this never came up in any of the interviews I read.